Good morning and welcome to Good Design. Why design? Why good design? I think God is interested in design. I think God is interested in good design. Now, I don't know God well. We've never actually met. But I have read a book about him. At least I've read a bit of the book. It's a very long book, so it's hard to read all of it. But when I was reading it, what I noticed was the start of it tells the story of creation. The end of it gives you the blueprints to heaven, the details, the diagrams, the materials of heaven. And in the middle, there's all this other design stuff. There's covenants, there's plans. There's even a section where God argues with his people about what sort of government they should have. God cares about design. He's really interested in it. And it bothers me sometimes as Adventists, we worry a little bit too much about design as just this creation-evolution battle. So this week is not about that. It's not about any sort of debate. It's just about enjoying design and learning about design and thinking a bit bigger about how we design things, because I think that that's something that God ordained for us. So this morning we have three interesting speakers who I think you'll appreciate very much. You're guaranteed to learn something. You're guaranteed to think about things that you wouldn't normally think about. I'm going to introduce my co-host, Aaliyah. Aaliyah will introduce our first speaker.
Hello, hello. Okay, so first up, we have Maddie. And Maddie's speaking about the good design in creative communication. And who better to speak about this than someone who is a communication and marketing professional? So this is the real deal. Like, he knows his stuff. Maddie's lifelong SDA. He's been involved in heaps of community outreach. And, we'd love to invite Maddie up to the stage and just share what he has.
Thank you, Aaliyah. Good morning, everyone. Oh, thanks, Mark. Well, I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here to talk to you this morning, and you're not at the beach, so I really appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Yeah, look, this morning we're going to talk about creativity. We're going to talk about designing culture. So I've titled the talk Redesigning Culture. And I'm hoping, put your hand up if you have a creative streak. Fantastic. That's more than the average that people would admit anyway. Have you ever had a dream crushed by a well-meaning friend or relative? It usually happens when you're like 7 or 8 years old. Anyone want to be a painter or a musician? How did mum and dad respond to that? I grew up in an environment where drawing, music, creative expression, that was something that kids did to pass the time, you know, keep you out of trouble. And look, back then, I grew up before the internet, right? Yeah, I know. But back then, that was a sort of a sensible approach. It was really hard to make a living as an artist. Pre-internet, getting yourself published, getting yourself out there, making a living by being creative was not likely. You know, it's quite difficult. When I finally made the decision to go and study production and storytelling, it felt like the most irresponsible thing I could do. I switched from a business to production, and yeah. Fast forward 15 years, and today the world runs on information. And today, good communicators are in high demand. Good communicators that can harness the potential of words and images and sound and film to tell stories, they're in high demand in many industries. Deloitte did a recent study just last year, and they looked at 9 European countries, and they estimated growth in creative economies of 40% by 2030. This is a quote from the study. The creative economy is likely to be a key driver of economic growth over the long term. And being in the industry for 10 years, I witnessed that, and I could see that happening over the career, over the industry, and I saw that within the ministry space as well. We need strong communicators that can harness creative ways to cut through. And so this is hence the talk for today. This is a quote from Edward de Bono. Oh, we missed one. There is no doubt that creativity is the most important human resource of all. Without creativity, there would be no progress. There'd be no, and we would be forever repeating the same patterns. So today I want to talk about designing culture or redesigning culture through creative expression. Artists, writers, designers, filmmakers, songwriters, photographers, poets. Creativity has cut through. It captures our attention, it makes us think, it makes us feel. It's a catalyst for change. It creates culture. Now, some Christians feel uncomfortable in principle about this notion of freedom of expression. You know, after all, Jeremiah 17 verse 9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" And perhaps it is wise not to entertain your passions or your artistic impulses. Who knows what might happen, right? But in reality, Christianity has always generated artistic expression, you know. Whether it's been commissioned by the church, this one's going one ahead, whether it's been commissioned by the church or whether individuals have been moved by the Holy Spirit, some of our greatest artists and musicians, inventors, builders have been made famous for their contributions to Christian art. Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Handel, and some of these continue to impact culture even today. Martin Luther. We often think of the reformers as austere monastics, you know, always dressed in black. The reality is the Reformation was propelled by contemporary technological and artistic creativity. I want to introduce you to Lucas Cranach, the Elder. See, Martin Luther had the impact that he did largely due to the portraits, the paintings, the illustrated designs, this is all his work, created by Lucas Cranach, fresh off the newly invented Gutenberg press. He painted many portraits of Luther and was instrumental in amplifying Luther's voice. Several years earlier, two Reformation missionaries from England, they travelled to Prague to spread their newfound light to distant lands. They were quickly silenced by the authorities, so they couldn't preach. But being artists as well as preachers, they set up their easels in a public space and proceeded to paint two paintings. One represented Christ entering Jerusalem, meek and sitting on a donkey. The other portrayed the pontifical procession with the Pope arrayed in his rich robes and triple crown, mounted on a horse magnificently adorned. I don't think this is the actual painting, but this is a rendition, something like this. Crowds came to gaze upon the drawings. They were deeply impressed by that contrast, you know, this protest against the arrogance and the injustices of the church at that time. You can read the story in The Great Controversy. And my question is, what would it look like today to redesign culture through art, music, and other forms of creativity? As an immigrant, I grew up in two cultures, never really feeling like I belonged to either of them. Now, most of the time, I felt like I was an outsider looking in. And I feel like that's where we are as Christians today. We find ourselves in a position where we are on the outside looking in to the culture around us. But it wasn't always this way. For centuries, Christianity was dominant in Western culture. The height of this culturally dominant Christendom is probably epitomized in the Gothic cathedral, this hyper-stylized, over-ornamented, art-filled storytelling experience. William Morris, describes Gothic style as a revolt against utilitarianism, an architectural style that is more art and ornamentation than perhaps any other style in the history of built works. Yet there's probably no other architectural style that is able to impute this unsettled sense of spirituality, of heaven, of hell, of earth, of the soul, as when one walks down the light-filled nave of Notre Dame. The unfettered ability of Gothic style to celebrate and communicate the stories and traditions of Christendom has captured the imagination of centuries of believers, builders, and modern secular culture creators as well. Think Bram Stoker. The architects and masons of that age brought to life aspirations born of spiritual and religious fervour. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. This was the church of medieval Europe. The cathedral was literally situated on the highest point in town, and its towering spire could be seen from any direction. And today we find ourselves in a very different world. In the West, Christianity is no longer dominant in culture. And I believe us as Christians, we're still sort of coming to grips with that, still adjusting to that fact. Today, our tallest buildings belong to banks and luxury hotels. And we often feel like our cultural input as Christians is looked upon with contempt. Yet Jesus' words continue to compel us. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I love this quote from Greg Sheridan's latest book. To find an entry point into contemporary culture for Christianity and a language with which to speak effectively to today's young people, and then to tell them about the timeless truths in all their splendor, fulfillment, and challenge, that is a remarkable achievement. Francis Schaeffer, theologian, philosopher, a Christian should use these arts to the glory of God, not just as tracts, mind you, but as things of beauty to the praise of God. An artwork can be a doxology in itself. I love that idea of art as worship. Can we redesign culture? Andy Crouch, the only way to change culture is to create more of it. And if you are interested in this topic of Christianity and culture, look up Andy Crouch. He's done a lot of work in this space. My message today isn't a how-to guide, how to redesign culture, but rather a call to creatives to use their God-given gifts and talents. We are called to bring out of our storehouses treasures both new and old. We may not turn culture around, but we can influence it for the better, one person at a time, influencing in whichever field they are passionate about. Could be justice, freedom, sustainability, mental health, poverty, chronic illness, spirituality. Whatever you're passionate about, you are called. And I think we can all agree that we can do better than simply posting another sermon on YouTube. There is certainly a place for the spoken word. But sometimes there are certain experiences, there are times when words are not enough to express what we're going through. And we need a better language. On December 21, 1988, a terrorist bomb exploded aboard Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie in Scotland. 259 passengers and crew perished along with 11 people on the ground. Bodies, effects, debris and wreckage fell over an area of about 840 square miles. The recovery process was beyond anyone's imagination. Now, aboard Pan Am 103 were many young people. Among them was a firstborn son named Alexander, a Syracuse University senior on his way home for Christmas. Alexander was 21 years old. His mother, Susie Lowenstein, was devastated. Susie is a sculptor. Her emotions at the time translated through to her work in the form of human figures with expressions of grief, pain, and rage. She began working on a project called Dark Elegy. When other women who had also lost loved ones on Pan Am 103 learned about Susie's work, many wanted to contribute to the project. Susie tells the story better than I can, so I'll quote her here. "One by one, they came into my studio, stepped onto a posing platform, closed their eyes and went back to December 21, 1988, to that horrible moment when they learned that their loved one had died. They allowed their bodies to fall into the position that it took upon hearing that most devastating news. Some scream, some beg, some weep, some pray, some curl into a ball, while others raise their fists in anger and despair. Through sculpture, Susie Lowenstein immortalizes that moment of inexpressible anguish and grief. Dark Elegy is created with love for the victims of terrorism. You know, we need people who can help us find better language to express the experiences we are going through and to connect us together. I don't know if you've seen the latest movie, Spider-Man, last summer. I'll try not to spoil it for you if you haven't. Most of the Spider-Man movies have the same sort of plot throughout, and it's really about revenge and justice. Peter Parker loses someone he loves, his uncle, Aunt May, and then goes out and beats the villain. And it's the same standard superhero archetype, you know. The question is, will he act with integrity and honour when things get personal, right? This latest movie certainly has that story through the plot, but the premise of the movie is actually love your enemies. The whole story hangs on Peter and his friends trying to redeem and rescue all these supervillains from themselves. It's just straightforward love your enemies, seek and save the lost narrative. They even have a passing reference of youth pastors in the movie. Now, this is Marvel, right? The greatest franchise of our time. Not only do I believe that we can influence culture, but I believe that people are drawn to what is good and noble and just and beautiful and true. I could go on with many superlatives, all that describe God. Jesus says, "And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." This is the gospel, Christ lifted up. He emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Jesus was lifted up. At the cross, the religious leaders and Roman soldiers lifted him up. At his resurrection, God the Father lifted him up. At Pentecost, the apostles lifted him up. In the New Testament, the gospel writers lift him up. Throughout the centuries, theologians and writers and artists and poets and composers and builders have lifted him up. And today, we continue to lift him up. I don't know about you, but particularly over the last 5 to 10 years, I've really enjoyed the music, the Christian music that's been coming out. Some of the later bands compared to what I was growing up with. For King and Country, Need to Breathe, We the Kingdom. I don't know, I believe we can redesign culture by creating culture. We can actually start right here. And I'm going to ask for a bit of a commitment. Now, there's no need to get nervous. There's no one signing up for anything, but I do want to put something to you, and it's all voluntary. Like, at the room of this size, there are a fair few creatives in the room. So I'm going to give you a brief, right? Here's the mission that you have to think about. Think back to the most powerful spiritual experience in your life. create a work of art expressing what you felt in that moment. So the scope is up to you, self-defined. It can be anything from like a two-hour afternoon project or a 12-month-long masterpiece. It could be like, you know, a five-volume fiction novel series or something. In the audience, same thing, up to you. You can hang it in your hallway or post it online or... What do you think? Think back to the most powerful spiritual experience in your life. Create a work of art expressing what you felt in that moment. Is that a brief, for those who have creative skills in the room, is that a brief that you wouldn't mind signing up to? I'm not going to grab your names, I'm just curious. All right, we have a few in the room here. For everyone else, hold up your hands, continue holding up your hands. For everyone else, look around. These are your culture creators. Give them all a round of applause. And as we end, I just want to leave you with these words that I put together some time ago. There's a language that speaks deeper than words. A language of emotion, expression, and imagination. That spark of originality and cognitive freedom that we often refer to as creativity. If you were by some miracle born innately creative, or by fortuitous happenstance, your environment has nurtured and endowed you with the talent to express yourself in any creative way, you have the rare ability to bless your fellow man in countless measure. Do not discount your ability to express your thoughts and feelings in creative ways as a useless pastime, something to keep you preoccupied on your daily commute. When you pour out your soul onto a blank canvas, this is a language devoid of syntax and structure, yet it communicates clear and loud because it comes from a profound longing to connect. You pour out your soul because you want to be seen, because you have something to say, and because you want to be heard. And we listen because your creative language has made explicit our deepest longings for which we have never found words. And within us, we shout, "Yes, that's it. That is my life. That's what I'm going through." Your creativity gives the rest of us the vowels, the consonants, the vocabulary we lack to communicate our experiences and puts an end to the corrosive silence within. This is a call to the painters, the musicians, the photographers, the writers, the illustrators, designers, dancers, dressmakers, actors, animators, filmmakers, florists, singers, songwriters, sculptors, poets, playwrights, performers. The world does need you. When we're struggling to understand each other, when our discourse descends into dichotomy, when the problems we face seem so great that we turn on one another, we need a language that is louder, clearer, deeper. And that's where you come in. Visualize the potential of your creativity. Your task is to develop your talent to where it is refined, amplified, and excellent, so that when applied, it can cut deep into the soul and reach into our hearts. Develop your craft. Discipline your gift. Use it purposefully. Your creativity is your mind. Therefore, guard your mind against the distortions of self-doubt, against destructive vices and devices, against the perversions of politics and the deceit of popularism. Enlist your talent in a higher calling. And in so doing, you may just happen to shine the light for someone who is walking the midnight path in need of guidance, perspective, insight, and truth. What is your gift? Make it a blessing. Thank you.
Brilliant. Cheers. Thanks so much, Maddie. You can be creative. You can be interesting. You can change. And you've just been given permission. And Maddie's from the South Pacific Division, so he knows what he's talking about. Thanks, Maddie. Our next speaker, her name is Deb Hopper. And she is a pediatric occupational therapist. She works with children, with their parents. She works with families that might be struggling a little bit with issues like anxiety, sensory processing challenges, learning difficulties. She's an expert. She works and makes families' lives better, and she also, I know, works with her peers and educates people involved in that area. Please welcome her, Debbie Hopper.
Thank you. Do you want that?
Hello. It's people in real life. It's been so long since I've spoken. It's been Zoom, like everybody else. Okay. Wired for survival and wired to heal. So sensory processing is how we take in information through all our senses, the ones that everybody knows, but also through our balance, through movement, and through our muscle, and also our interoception. So that's our feeling of, you know, feeling nervous before a talk, for example. So it's how the brain makes sense of all that information. And I just love this quote. During every moment of our life, we experience the world through our varied sensory systems. Sensory experiences drive our behaviour and contribute to the organisation of our thoughts and emotions. And today we'll be talking about how sensory just doesn't impact coordination, but how sensory impacts our thoughts and our emotions. So let's talk about being wired for survival. I want to introduce you to, let's call him Alex. Alex is 6 years old here. He has autism. I met him when he was in preschool. He did okay in preschool, but in 2020 he started kindergarten and it was too hard for him. He didn't cope. He was in a mainstream class and it was just really, really hard for him. COVID hit in 2020. And then in 2021, it was the beginning of third term when we all went into lockdown. He did not cope with the change of the news of more lockdowns. He coped by chewing through 3 T-shirts in the first 24 hours when that was announced. So when we're talking about sensory processing that doesn't go well, we talk about the stress response, being in that fight, flight, or freeze response. And you can see here, he's in the freeze response here, but he also had that fight response and flight absconding from school. So this is a little bit geeky, but I love a little bit of geekiness. So basically, there's 3 parts of our brain in development. We have the brain stem, which is our survival mode. And then we have the limbic system, which is our emotions. And then we have the cortex. We have to have the brain stem going okay, developing well, to then be in control of our emotions and then being able to think and learn and problem solve. If we struggle with either of those bottom two, the top level of learning is really hard. So let's talk about just the touch system today in our brief time. So I often talk about the analogy of having either a big cup or a small cup for touch. So, a little cup, it's like we have a threshold. A little bit of touch input can feel way too much. That scratchy tag can feel way too much. The lumpy, bumpy socks, some parents here might be able to relate to that. Whereas if we have a large cup, it's like our sensory seekers. They love it. They need to have lots and lots of input to notice it. So let's talk about what it's like in our bodies when we have a small cup. So this is like a graph of a student's level of alertness or their sensory system over a day. So we can see that they might start in the low zone, but when they put on their school uniform or when they put on their socks or when they have to use glue or touch sand or anything in class, their sensory system goes into that high level of alertness, into that level of stress response. And they stay there all day. So it's like you are mega stressed and hyper alert the whole day. Okay, so let's talk about some examples of being hyper alert. So, and I loved the little skit last night with the 5 or 7 levels of touch, you know, the elbow, and that was amazing acting last night. But some kids, they just can't handle touch or hugs. Or they may be okay with going in for a hug or asking for a hug when their sensory system feels fine. But if it's unexpected, then it can be really hard for them. So they may be... they might like particular clothing styles or different textures of clothes. They don't like scratchy, itchy clothes. They don't like tags or those bumpy, lumpy socks. They may prefer soft materials. They may prefer long pants all year round. Or they may hate that feeling of having pants on their legs and they're in shorts all year round. They may avoid having contact with people. So often these kids might be the side-by-side huggers or the A-frame huggers. We had one of those in our family. Some of these kids, they may react when they're lining up to go into class because a little bump on their skin feels way too much. And they interpret that as being punched, and that's why they react, but then they get in trouble. So sometimes these behaviours are really just clues, clues that something is not quite right in their sensory system. So this can impact in the home as well. Not liking having a bath or having a shower. Not liking their fingernails being cut. Not liking their face being washed. Not liking going to the dentist, although I guess most of us don't. and especially, doing arts and crafts in school, using glue and paint can be really, really hard. So as I said before, if we have these unexpected feelings of touch, which we don't like or we can't process, we can have a real emotional reaction. So sometimes that can be seen as aggression, and it comes back to that fight response in the stress system. They feel stressed being too close to people. And maybe you can relate to that after COVID of having a bigger personal space bubble after all the social distancing. So, yeah, having an emotional reaction is really a clue that things may not be going right. Okay, so a little bit more geekiness. So this is where we talk about the design wired for safety and survival. And so that comes into the second column. So there are three main tracks in the spinal cord. So the second one, the anterolateral and the spinothalamic tracts, they process pain, temperature, tickle and itch. And this is the tract that is often too strong. Whereas the other tract, which is deep touch pressure, vibration, and our sense of proprioception or position, that is our protective tract. And I'm sure that, you know, you all had your facial or your massage before coming to big camp, so you are super, super relaxed. But that is the tract that really helps us to be calm and grounded the most. So what happens when we have our spinothalamic or our light touch tract, which is way too strong? So basically, the deep touch tract doesn't get a look in. So the dorsal column system fails to exert the normal inhibitory influence over the other system. And that's why the light touch can feel like pain in some instances. So how are we wired to hear? So we really want to help kids to have predictable touch input, but not only touch, predictable routines. We want kids to be able to know and to say, I feel okay because I know what's coming up. And sensory input can really calm that brainstem as well. We want to increase that relationship and provide support. That's going to really support the limbic system, that blue part in the brain. And once we have those two at the just right level, then we have a calm body, calm emotions, and kids can think and problem solve. So I've developed this little diagram, which I'm happy to send to everybody. You just print it, you laminate it. It's like a sound desk kind of thing. So it's all colour-coded. So the pink is the brainstem, our fight, flight, freeze response. As I mentioned before, we want kids to know, we need them to feel safe. And to make our brainstem feel safe, that we need to have things structured and predictable. And the sensory supports can really help to calm that down as well. Emotions. We need to have that real sense of belonging, which has been such a theme of this big camp. We need to have that attachment, that nurture, that relationship with our kids. And I guess this is where the five love languages comes in. We may feel that we are giving nurture to our children, but we really need to be able to do it in a way that they understand it. So in this example, this may be an example of our little boy, Alex. So the level of challenge... Can I have a pointer? No. Oh, the Just Right challenge that we have... Oh, how do I go back? Can you help, Lucas? Thank you. So Alex's Just Right challenge, he could only achieve a very low challenge because his brainstem was totally flipped. His lid was flipped. Mum was super, super, super nurturing. But what we had to do was we had to really ramp up the structure, predictability, his routine using visuals, and ramp up that sensory support. And let's see what happens. So with him, as you could see in that first picture, we use a body sock or a happy sack, which is this lycra, stretchy lycra, which made him feel so much happier. We use lots of deep touch pressure before he got dressed, you know, pressing down on our legs and arms. We use lots of vibration. So there's heaps of, you know, the bug massages and that blue coil over his head and around his arm is a vibrator toy. And that really helps to stimulate the dorsal column and make it stronger. He got a cloud sack, a big, soft bean bag, and he just lives in it, curled up in that calm position. That's him in the hammock there, squished down with toys, squished down with the ball. So that really helps to balance out the system, to take away the strength of the vagotwist system and really ramp up that dorsal column. So here, you can see what we did is we increased his structure and predictability. We increased the sensory supports. Mum was still supportive, but she didn't have to be so, you know, with him every second of the day. And you can see his just right level. He could do more. He could do more because we had increased the other supports. And this is a great little cheat sheet. Just, you know, if... Is it on? Yeah. Just getting to the exciting bit. So you can just, yeah, use this as, you know, as a brainstorm. If your child's going through a tricky situation or a tricky phase, you can think, you know, what's happened, you know, and it doesn't have to be like trauma. A trauma like the floods, a trauma like changing schools, a trauma like moving, learning difficulties. There's so many different like traumas that kids go through. And by using this as a guide, you can go, do we need to increase the routine right now? Do we need to, you know, increase, make a sensory corner for them to hang out in? Have I been away, or has Dad been away? Do they need some extra nurture and support, just so that we can help them to do as much as they can do? Okay, I love this quote too. We are what we eat, and we live what we sense. By controlling what we take in through our senses, we can influence how we feel, what we think, and how we behave. So he looks like he's in fight and flight here, or freeze. He's actually in freeze. But he's actually feeling really calm. He can look through that happy sack. He can look through, his body feels calmer. Mum can do the shopping and he feels calmer. He's not having meltdowns on the shopping, in the aisle. So we used all those supports, and we also used ice. Ice is a really good cheat sheet. It's called the dive reflex. It's like jumping into a cold pool where you get that gasp response. Using ice, just a frozen water bottle at school, just to put on their face, can really help to bring them down again. Okay, just to finish up, there remains little doubt that tactile stimulation is an important factor in the social, emotional, physical and neurological development of not just infants and young children, but everybody. Consequently, it's one of the most essential elements in the nurturing and the healing environment. So we are wired for safety and security, but God has also given us that dorsal column that we can help to stimulate and to make ourselves feel much more grounded and safe.
Thanks, Debbie. Thank you so much, Debbie. Debbie will be around after the meeting, so if you do want to talk to Debbie about anything specific, I told you you'd learn something today. I did not know it was going to be about the spinothalamic system, but there you go. These handouts will be on the sound desk and some down the front, so Debbie's got a free intro talk. I forget that some of these things are super relevant to you. If you enjoyed hearing from Maddie earlier, Maddie has a workshop this afternoon. He is speaking on innovation in ministry. Ministry innovation, which is his major role at the South Pacific Division. That will be over there at the Young Adult Tent. Don't let that mislead you. That talk is for anyone. It's for all. It just happens to be scheduled over there at 3:30 this afternoon. So feel free to join him for that workshop-style meeting. More to come.
Okay, so our last speaker is Darren Morton, and For those of you who know who Darren is, he's very into lifestyle medicine and well-being. He's an associate professor at Avondale University. So really, you're getting a lecture for free. You're going to learn heaps of stuff. It's going to be brilliant. So I'd like to invite Darren up to share.
Hey guys, nice to be with you this morning. There's my little clicker. You've done well. And thanks, Maddie and Debbie, for that. That was really, really cool, very insightful. I'm going to be quick, so I won't take too much of your time because I know that it's warming up and the beach is getting really good. But I want to share with you just a little bit about my world and some things that speaks to this whole idea of good design. Maddie asked the question at the start, raise your hand if you're a creative. And I didn't put my hand up because I actually come from that math science-y background. And I'm not very artistic, I wouldn't have thought. But my wife reminded me that I like to be creative in different ways. And I think we all have that. You know, when we talked about being made in the image of God, I think that's really what it was speaking to. I'm not quite sure that God necessarily looks exactly like us. but I think that we have that spark of creativity within us, and that's certainly characteristic of our designer. So I grew up in Gippsland, I suppose you'd say, back in Victoria, and always had a fascination with sort of the maths and sciences. But the thing I think that always really captivated me was how us humans work. And I still maintain that, you know, if you look at the creation story, the pinnacle of it is the creation of the human. And so in some ways, we're almost the capstone of creation, which comes with a tremendous responsibility, I think, as well. But I think that there's just so... It's always fascinated me how we humans work. It started from how we work from a physical perspective, and probably as I've got older, I've shifted more to an intrigue in how we work and how we can work best from a psychological perspective. But when I was a young man, I was somewhat of I tried to be an athlete. And there was this verse in the Bible that used to always captivate me because I like to run and I like to exercise. But this one here, "For they shall run and not grow weary." Wow, that just sounded like a really cool concept to me. And they will walk and not be faint. And so, you know, you'd be out training, and I always ruminate this whole idea that, hey, you know, imagine a day where you could run and not grow weary. Just run effortlessly. Well, I went on to university. I studied initially to become a PE teacher. And the area that always intrigued me most was the anatomy and physiology. I was just fascinated by the design of it. And it was design. And what it really spoke to me back in that time, it spoke to me of intelligence. It spoke to me of intent. And it spoke to me of beauty. You know, how this system, how these things work, I made this declaration way back then that I realised I just did not have enough faith to be an atheist, because it just, to my mind, it was just completely overwhelming. And so this idea, though, of energy, you know, to be able to run and not grow weary. So when we started to embark upon our studies, one area that really captivated me was what we call bioenergetics, how we get energy, how we humans can sit there right now and just exist, you know, continue to breathe and tune in to every word that I'm saying right now, maybe. It's a remarkable thing, right? And I'd continue to keep doing that, right? So keep breathing, keep tuning in. But your ability to do that is just phenomenal. And so I want to give you just a little piece of the puzzle, just a little, you know, part of the story of how we actually get energy, and then come back at the end. And as I said, I'm not going to go for long, but what that actually means for what it might look like to actually do this, to run and not grow weary. And maybe, you know, maybe that might be our reality one day. So the story starts with this thing here. It's glucose. And I thought, you know, to make this a bit more interactive and fun, I need a volunteer, and I'm just going to pick someone completely random in the room. Jim Hawkins. Well, there you go. Come on down. Give Jim a round of applause. Come on down, Jim. Yeah, how's that? I didn't know he was going to be here today. And he's regretting that he is. But anyway, so just come up the front here, Jim. Now, so what I need to tell you about, and don't get too hung up on the, you know, the heavy science here, but this is actually what sort of, if you wanted a really creative, simplistic view of it, this is what a glucose molecule looks like. It's got six carbons in it, so it sort of forms this really nice, and I'll come back to that idea of beauty. You know, why it does this is quite remarkable, but it forms a hexagon shape. Now, we're going to get our glucose molecule. Come over here, Jimbo. All right, so what I'll get you to do is just to hold your hands above your head like this and sort of form a bit of a, both hands, that's it, a bit of a hexagon shape. Does that sort of look like a hexagon shape? You've been working out, mate. Yeah, look at that. Okay, so let me tell you what happens with a humble but good-looking glucose molecule when you want to get some energy from it. And you're all doing this right now as we speak, right? So what the first thing that happens is that glucose enters this thing that's like a, it's a cascade of metabolic pathways and chemical changes. The first step, there's this thing called a phosphate molecule. And the phosphate molecule comes along, goes, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and plugs on to one of the corners, one of these carbon chains. So what's the sound effect it makes? Let's do this together. Yeah. You know when you get up early in the morning and you hear that sound? It's all those phosphate molecules plugging onto parts of your body. Anyway, so we have a phosphate molecule now plugged on. This thing now, Jim, is not called just glucose. He's now called glucose-6-phosphate. Okay, the story continues. We need another volunteer. Joey, thanks for putting your hand up there, brother. Come on and give him a round of applause. Come on down, Joey. All right, so what happens next is this humble glucose that now has this phosphate, here's this glucose-6-phosphate, does a remarkable little dance. Okay, it's like a shimmy type thing. And what it does, it sort of pivots a little bit. And so instead of making like a six-sided hexagon shape, it becomes a pentagon shape, like five-sided. Let's see how you can do your best, mate. It's, well, look at that. That's sort of like got a Usain Bolt kind of feel to it, hasn't it? Okay, and of course, in the process of going from here to here, it sort of works out a little bit as well. So what happens now, it's actually gone through this process that we call isomerization. So it started as glucose, got that, thanks for the sound effect, phosphate on there, it's glucose-6-phosphate. Then it goes through this isomerization to become fructose-6-phosphate. Well done. You know, well, hold the pose. The next step is that there's another phosphate that comes along and plugs onto this, what is now fructose-6-phosphate, plugs onto another carbon, the first carbon, makes the sound effect. And so now we have fructose-1,6-biphosphates. All right? You're getting bored yet? You might well be. So you can put your hands down. Give them a round of applause. They can exit the stage. You know what I've just described to you there? Are the first three steps there in the process of you harnessing energy from glucose. You can see them up there, and then you can see it gets more complex from there. The end result is this stuff called pyruvate or pyruvic acid. Then that enters in, you can see pyruvate up the top there, that enters into the Krebs cycle. Some of you would have heard about this before. It goes into oxaloacetate or the citric acid cycle is another name for it. Then, you know, that sort of looks a bit complex, doesn't it? Well, that's not the entire story because it looks a little more like this. All right, and so I thought, you know, we've still got a bit of time, so we might just go through. No, we might do that too. Hey, the point I'm making here is this is ridiculously complex, isn't it? But there's a beauty to it, you know, and when you see, why does it make a nice little hexagon shape? Why does it make this nice little pentagon shape? No one's looking at it. Well, maybe someone is. Maybe someone is. And what it speaks to me as I come back to once again is this whole idea of design. There's intelligence here. There's intent here. There's beauty here. This is good design. Is it the best design though? Because here's an interesting thing. You know, if going from Jimbo to Joey, there's a little, you actually need not just the chemicals to do this, you actually need helper chemicals to make that action occur. And there's one of those little chemical reactions, you know, a helper in there, we call them enzymes, called phosphofructokinase. His mates call him PFK. And what we know is that when you start to need more energy, like let's say that we all went outside and said, let's start running now because we can run and we don't grow weary. Well, we actually would grow weary because as we start to run and we start to wind this system up and we're needing more energy and more glucose starts spilling into the top of it, what happens is that little enzyme, PFK, starts to wind down and can't keep up the pace anymore. And so all of a sudden, instead of this thing flowing faster and faster and faster, it starts to get held up and banked up. And we experience this thing that we call fatigue. Why does it happen like that? Why is it that phosphofructokinase, PFK, slows down? Could you design a system where it didn't do that? Where all of a sudden that wasn't a rate-limiting step? You know, if you could do that, then maybe this is a truth. Maybe this is a potential. You know, maybe under a new order of things, a new design, an even better design. You know, and it interests me that creatives are like this, aren't they? It's always good, better, best. You know, and even in the creation account, we have Jesus going, God saying, you know, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's very good. You know, maybe the best design is yet to come. And maybe it will be realised in a time when this will be a reality for us. And I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you so much, Darren. That's. Do you know anyone else that can make PFK interesting like that? Goodness me. That finishes our program for today. Please come back tomorrow, 9:40. Tomorrow is a little different topic, a little different tack. There'll be less physiology for sure. We will have Lyle Hyas. He'll be talking about design of good worship. How do you design good worship? Charissa Tarossian will join us as well. She'll be talking about how do you make evangelism in these modern times. So a little different slant tomorrow, another speaker as well. So please come along, 9:40. Thank you so much for joining us today.